Hey everyone, we got a real spooky one. Boo! This week. Actually, it really scared the bejeebers out of me when I first saw it when I was a kid, but man, this is good. I realized halfway through what I had seen in, I don't even remember when, but it was only part of something much bigger, which I guess is Doom the movie, but it is just a phenomenal thing. And I know you probably remember the part where Samuel plucks his eyes out, but it's so much bleaker than that, man. It's awesome. So I'm going to keep it quick so I can get back to the horror movies that we're doing for Halloween month. Review us. 5-star reviews. iTunes. We need it. Stitcher. We need them. We have like one review on Stitcher. So, ugh. Join the Facebook group. We do some fun stuff there. And November 2nd, we are doing a Cineprov show. Gargoyles. I'm going to be possibly part of it. So, you know, I appreciate it if you can come out. Thanks, guys.
Hey, guys.
Hi!
Check out Rec Level 3.
What's that?
We're a gaming, geek, nerd culture fandom podcast.
Ooh. Wow!
And you can find us every Friday at 11:30 a.m. on reclevel3.com.
Yay!
We finally got started after trying for half an hour. We watched Event Horizon, Paul Anderson's, I guess, movie, I don't even know, video game movie sequel to Mortal Kombat? I got it. Yeah, it's fine. It's good. It'll work. I'm Nick Hoffman, editor-in-chief at My Opie Defender Childhood and Dude Letter and all that bullshit. And Riff Red Cineprov, and on panel we have...
Matthew W. Quinn.
Jeremy.
Hello, this is Daniel, and I discovered a black hole to Albuquerque.
Yeah, that's funny.
I have my moments.
Kind
of. So maybe that's where the rabbit dude from Donnie Darko comes from.
Oh, God. That's pretty good. That's a really creepy rabbit. What was I watching? I don't even know. His production company is now Darko Productions.
What's
they produced, I Hope They Serve Beer in Hell.
That guy's such an asshole.
Yep.
Tucker Max.
I was about to say, what has Richard Kelly done in the last 10 years?
Nothing. I mean, did you see Southland Tales?
I did. It was fascinating in its horrendousness.
So, before we get too far into this, Daniel, Jeremy, and I watched this together. It was fantastic. I realize it literally is Doom the movie. If Sam Neill had been played by... No, Sam Neill's Sam Neill. If one of the crewmen had been played by The Rock, I think it could have been improved. Like, do the crossover of that movie, because I think The Rock's actually really good.
The surviving black dude could have been The Rock.
I don't know, man. You can't take away the comic relief. I like Sean Petrie. But a character like him, who like literally tries to throw Sam Neill up against the wall, like... played by The Rock would have been great, and then his like evil comes out. We can't go too far.
His evil comes out.
Ladies, we were talking about Hugh Hefner earlier today. Before we get too far into this, though, Daniel, will you give us a plot synopsis?
Like you said, it's basically Doom the movie. The Event Horizon is a ship that's got this core that's supposed to be basically a warp drive to any planet in the universe very quickly. It's faster than light speed travel. Problem is that on its first voyage, it disappeared. Now, 7 years later, it's reappeared above Neptune, and this crew goes out to figure out what happened to the Event Horizon, why it disappeared, and where it went. And spooky things happen.
This is a movie based around a MacGuffin.
Yeah, pretty much.
The fact that it works is all we can take for granted. It doesn't really matter. But it's kind of like one of these secret mission movies where they're all the way, they wake up out of hypersleep, and then they get their actual mission the whole time. They find out why Sam Neill's there. Sam Neill is,
he was the guy that invented the warp drive, basically.
Dr. Grant from Jurassic Park is another kind of scientist yet again.
But he does it so well.
I know. I'm being classy this time. I'm drinking white wine, so.
Watch and make sure the bottle doesn't start filling with blood when you're not looking.
That's funny. But yeah, we should kind of talk about this. We should talk about this movie, said the guy who does a movie podcast.
yeah, we should.
Do we have to?
Yes, we have to.
Okay.
So yeah, this is... Okay, so we should go through this cast, because this cast is awesome. We have... this is Paul W.S. Anderson, if we have mentioned, who really did direct Mortal Kombat 2 years before this. This is the movie he did after that, which is awesome.
I heard he showed this like a rough cut to Kurt Russell once, who had like been in the running to be in the cast. And Kurt Russell was like, you know, this is the movie like in right now, everybody's going to hate it. But in 15 years, this is the one you'll be proud of. And damn it all, Kurt Russell's right.
This movie is spectacularly creepy. It's really fantastic. I hadn't seen this before, I'll be honest. I knew bits of it. And when we left, when it was over, I was giddy.
Strangely enough, when I watched it, came over here, I was talking to my folks shortly afterwards. My mom was like, oh, I remember watching that movie. And I'm like, Mom, you did not see Event Horizon. She's like, no, I did. I did.
What was she confusing it with Vertical Limit?
No. She was like actually saying, it's got that... that guy from The Matrix in it, right? I'm like, oh my God.
Oh, wow.
How?
She wasn't confusing it with Apocalypse Now?
Or no. Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure?
I'm just wondering for the rest of the week, in what circumstances did you ever see this movie?
Well, the Baptist church went to see this to learn about hell one day. It's like all those people who took kids to watch Passion of the Christ and the...
Oh, yeah, that was fun.
I mean, porno would have been healthier for them, I think, but... so what's the name of their ship? I don't even remember.
Lewis and Clark.
The Lewis and Clark. Okay, they call it the Clark throughout. So the crew of the Clark is headed by Larry Fishburne, who I think by this point is still going by Larry, though The Matrix comes out 2 years later.
Yeah, I think you're right. He was like listening to the credits as Larry.
Larry's the guy you want to buy a beer with. Lawrence is going to lecture you.
I would totally buy Lawrence Fishburne a beer.
Oh, he deserves it, man. He's the best part of those movies by the end.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, in general. Well, I could have said that about any movie.
Hear me.
He's only in the
third. And then orgy. Yeah.
He's only in the third one for, like, what, 10 minutes?
Because he learned his lesson.
Aha.
I'd like to think. And he was... he made some pretty shitty Perry White, though. The editor of the Daily Bugle. I almost said the Daily Bugle.
I mean... Eddie Zack Snyder directed movie. Come on, you're not going to get your A game from people.
We're just lucky that he didn't make Wonder Woman a prostitute for some reason. I get the feeling, but he's fine.
Hey, Justice League hasn't come out yet. You never know.
Well said.
Those Paris apartments don't pay for themselves.
That's exactly right. And Marvel apparently extricated him. His next movie is Ant-Man and Wasp.
Oh, no, that's Peyton Reed.
Mm-mm. This is Larry Fishburne's IMDb. So
he's going to be in it.
That's what he said.
Nice.
No. Oh, Paul W.S. Anderson directing Ant-Man versus and the Wasp would have been in a hilarious, violent, horrifying turn for Marvel. You know what he should direct? Honestly, a Tick movie. He's the only one. He's absurd enough.
I don't know. Does the Tick rip people apart though?
This is the R-rated reboot of the Tick.
And you know what?
Because the Tick went into the Event Horizon and came back ripping people apart.
Yeah, I think you defended this movie, but a real to comic version of The Mask he could direct.
Ah,
because in The Mask he really does rip people apart.
The original Mask comic was pretty terrible.
Ooh, we need him to do the Punisher. We need him to do the Punisher.
Well, what was that French woman who did the Punisher Warzone?
Oh, Lexi Alexander. That is a great movie.
It's a great movie. Yes,
she is German.
Sorry, excuse me, German. But in that style, where it's just visceral, yes. Or like,
yeah,
because like. His version of the Wolverine, like I can see him literally showing either the Wolverine being ripped apart by like Magneto or him cutting Magneto's head off. Well, like
there was I think there was a comic once where it was the Wolverine gets torn in half by the Hulk.
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, you're 100% not wrong about that.
Yeah, there was.
Okay.
And so, like, okay, we need to talk about this crew.
In case you didn't pick up from all of our banter, Event Horizon has blood.
It's a horror movie. And
lots
it's
of blood.
One of our first, not our first, but this month, we're making an effort during Halloween to do honest to God straight horror movies, and this is one of the goriest we've done. You know, we did Scream, which is a horror movie, but it's silly.
Well, what was interesting about the gore, and you, I think, said this nicely, is there's actually very little that's shown. There's like 20-second flashes and that like a captain's log bit where he tears his eyes out, but they never linger on anything.
Yeah, a guy has his entrails literally, you know, dissected from him, but they don't actually show it. You just see the aftermath.
It's Malfoy's dad, so if you're a Harry Potter fan, then you'll love that scene.
Yeah. Or he's also the evil British guy from The Patriot. So maybe, maybe he is in hell for burning those people, and that's his hell, is being in Event Horizon, getting dissected by Sam Neill.
I imagine that being directed by W.S. Anderson is a form of hell. Yes. I will say as well, this movie is in. I don't know. Like, to me, it feels like a kind of interesting spiritual successor diversion from Alien, where Aliens is like the action movie response. This is a very horror movie response, where you have this creeping evil that you never really see, that is almost like a Jaws kind of thing, where you just see glimpses. And even at the end, where Sam Neill looks like Wolverine version of Deadpool, scarred up and awful, it's not really, you don't really see the evil.
I'm wondering why Sam Neill came back, because, and I know we're skipping way to the end, he gets pushed through a window, like, right before that, and then suddenly he's just back?
That might not actually be him. That could be the physical manifestation of whatever has taken over the ship.
That is Matt Quinn, actually, his conspiracy thought, mattering. That's actually something I hadn't thought about.
He says the ship brings him back, so maybe they just teleported him while he was in space.
It's like Sphere, which probably came out, the year before this?
The year after.
Well, I mean, it's manifesting the entity of Sam Neill's character, just kind of haunting them permanently.
Well, Sam, I think they start to go crazy even before they actually get on the ship, so it could be able to reach out from the ship and snag him as he's flying away.
The whole thing that the Event Horizon does before we get ahead is apparently, first and foremost, in the 7 years that it's gone, the warp drive took it to literal hell. And when it came back, what it does in order to get people there to stay on it is like make them hallucinate their deepest fears. So there's like Larry Fishburne remembering the guy that he let to get burned to death, and then Sam Neill keeps seeing his wife and
who killed herself, and we get the illusion that it's due to neglect. And it's essentially, when it opens a portal through this kind of weird gyroscopic thing, it's a very, I don't know, it's like a very medieval version of Catholic hell. Like, it's drippy, and it's scarred, and it's horrifying.
And lots of barbed wire.
Oh, if you want to see something really fun, watch that scene where Sam Neill's showing hell in slow-mo. You're gonna have a good time.
Well, I mean, like you alluded to, Sean Petrie is vivisected.
No, that was Jason Isaacs.
Jason Isaacs is vivisected. We just see the blinded Sam Neill cutting him apart, and then we just see his body kind of draped like a... Oh my God.
It's like a scene from the Hannibal TV show.
Without all the catchy jingles of a TV show.
Yeah.
It's the Hannibal.
Well, speaking of catchy jingles, am I the only one who got Hellraiser, like puzzle box tinkly music in this one?
Clive Barker, I think, helped with the script.
Because, like, sometimes you hear that little tinkling musical sound that means the gate to hell has been opened.
Which Hellraiser was it where it was Pinhead in space?
Bloodline, the last theatrical one.
Okay, so 4. All right.
People actually made it past the third one. I mean,
I like
only the strongest survive. There's like 5 more direct to video that got progressively suckier, I think.
Oh, Hellraiser 3, such a limited imagination.
No, I just, like, the way you said theatrical, I'm like, I just imagine the play version on stage. I mean, which is, you said it right, I'm not making fun of that. I just, like, imagine, hello, I am Shakespearean Hellraiser, you know?
I'm imagining the stage mechanics of having a Hellraiser stage play, like spring-loaded chains in a box.
Well, just imagine he applies for the Royal Shakespeare Company, but he's just Pinhead wearing, like, a Dutch collar, and he's like, to be! And they're just like, I'm going to stop you there, buddy. I just don't think you're ready for the part.
We have such sights to show you on stage.
Well, I mean, barring the on stage part, to your point, that's a line in Event Horizon with Sam Neill's wife, remember?
It is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of like that when...
So I think you're right. This very much is steeped in Hellraiser and that sort of mystical horror, mise en scène, as it were.
Yeah, the hell of metal instead of the hell of fire, because you never see fire. You just see a lot of people with barbed wire dug into their flesh.
Burning, and the warp drive's burning at the end.
For some reason.
We did this as, like, last week Blade Runner came out. This is a perfect sequel, right?
Because it's Blade Runner.
The electronic score, the fancy... I don't know, I'm just thinking out loud. In case you're curious, if you're looking this up on IMDb, the plot keywords are astronaut, comma, female astronaut.
There's a couple of those.
Very important distinction there.
You know. Comma, electronic music score, comma, suspense. So there you go.
I'll pretend to be Abby for a minute. There's actually a scene that passes the Bechdel test, the two female astronauts talking about coffee.
And they're also talking about not being killed at one point, which is not about a man. It's about Satan, like demon guys coming out. So, yeah.
How does that work, though? How do they build up to those scenes? Because it seems like we're just talking about the last act when, you know, everything gets revealed.
The movie actually goes... I watched the movie today back at my place before I came here. The movie actually moves pretty...
back at your place?
The movie actually moves pretty quickly at the beginning. Like, the first 20 minutes are over, like, very fast. They're leaving Earth and get to the event horizon.
Mm-hmm. Well, that guy, the whole thing starts because the gate, the warp drive opens that portal by itself, which, by the way, I have no idea how that warp drive works. All I could think of when they were offering that explanation is Neil deGrasse Tyson would kill you people.
Oh, it's a MacGuffin. They didn't even explain it. It just spins.
Well, they Sam Neill's explaining it in that one scene, then eventually tears out a page from that porno mag and
That's Veronica, thank you.
Yes. And it's about bending space-time so that two points are linked on...
It's a space-folding drive, like in Battlestar Galactica. You don't accelerate faster than light. That's not possible. You instead bend space-time so you move from one to the other instantly.
How the hell do you bend space-time?
That's the tricky part.
Well, that's the black hole, wormhole, or as they explain it in the movie Thor and Einstein-Rosenbridge, which is just magic MacGuffin. Okay. Like, that's what it is.
I didn't see any rainbows in this, though.
Although we could have used some Idris Elba.
Yeah.
Idris Elba deserves to be...
Hey, if they remade this today, he'd be a great Miller.
He'd be the Lawrence Fishburne substitute.
Ironically, Lawrence Fishburne is still alive.
I know.
You could still get Larry Fishburne. You could even call him Larry.
He's alive in our hearts.
He's the grandpa on that one show on ABC.
Blackish.
Yes, Blackish, that's right.
He's on a sitcom. His career went the wrong way, man.
He's Lawrence Fishburne. He doesn't care. It's like, here, we'll give you $500,000 an episode, 22 episodes, to just act grumpy. All right. I'd take that deal.
Just act grumpy. Grumpy, as I said.
Well, anyway, the warp drive opens and that one guy goes in.
Mm-hmm.
And then they pull him out and he's comatose.
Yeah, and then he wakes up rambling about how he, whoever he is coming, and then tries to commit suicide.
The darkness.
The White Walkers. No.
So the actor's name is Jack Noseworthy, because apparently he's English too. The actor's name, or the character's Justin. Justin gets sucked into the... They land at the Event Horizon, and Sam Neill, I guess, led by the U.S. Air Force or whatever, U.S. Space Corps, they're just trying to figure out what happened. He apparently, at this point in history, the Event Horizon is kind of a myth. It's like, you know, some magical ship.
The Flying Dutchman in space.
Perfect.
Well, it was a secret test project originally, right?
They had a cover, the Mary Celeste.
Maria Celeste, thank you.
Yeah,
I was like, Mary Calendar, floating out in a freezer.
Yeah, they had a cover story that was a deep space exploration ship. The space folding drive was the secret.
Right.
And so they were trying to figure out what happened. That's all it was. They wanted to go investigate it.
The most hilarious thing about this scene, especially considering it takes place in 2047, right, was in order, when they're on the Event Horizon, they recover the captain's log, which is on a DVD.
My other favorite part is in the right after the opening credits, they explain the history of space travel in the last 30 years. And the first event is 2019, they form a Mars colony. We're there, man.
Oh, yeah.
You got 2 years, Elon.
Well, 2015 is the moon base. There's
thank you.
Mining on the moon a little mining on Mars a little later. And then the Event Horizon after that. I guess the further out you go, which is interesting. I wonder where they built the Event Horizon. Maybe they built it further out so it would have to travel as far?
Well, it's a huge ship. It's like two ships. There's the hold with the warp drive thing in it, and then there's the main ship, and it's connected by that long hallway.
Yeah, and Sam Neill plays the Richard Hammond role, where he doesn't want his baby to be destroyed, but somehow is drawn to it forever.
Yeah, he just like a switch flips somewhere in there. He just starts out being a little too. He totally loses his mind halfway in.
Satan possesses people in this movie because they possess Noseworthy, right?
They do.
Because he goes into the airlock and hits it, which is why his eyes start exploding and everything.
Is that the most English name we've dealt with?
Nose.
Yeah, and Jim.
We did Paul Spottiswood from Tomorrow Never Dies.
Time to horrify everyone. In James Bond Jr., they had a character named Trevor Noseworthy, who is a really snobby British guy.
Uh-huh.
Snootsworth or something. It sounds like a Roald Dahl character. That's great.
Hook Nose.
Was the Roald Dahl reference to BFG since we're talking about Doom?
It was, in fact.
I was going to make a joke about how Roald Dahl was a racist prick, but you recovered.
You probably saw it. Did you like BFG?
It was okay.
It was charming for a kid's movie. I don't think it was a great film. No. I don't think it deserved to be buried the way it was.
No, it was. I mean, for the first half of the movie, I was like, are we going to get into the plot anytime soon?
That's true. It's slow going. But the book is kind of slow going as well. Whatever.
Wasn't there a cartoon of that at one point?
Yeah, I think so.
Ralph Bashy. Were kids being literally eaten?
I remember a lot of nightmare sequences where they talk about kids being eaten, so maybe.
That's entirely possible. That sounds about right.
Yeah.
Okay, so, sorry, we faded there.
So, Noseworthy, then, one of the most horrific scenes is him getting pushed out the airlock, and right before he goes out, the demonic presence in him leaves, and he suddenly realizes, oh, crap, I am about to die, and his veins start bulging in his hands and stuff.
Yeah, I'm a scuba diver, and a lot of that, the injuries he has are decompression injuries, like the blood coming out of his mouth, and you're supposed to breathe out.
Yep.
So he basically has a graphic on-screen embolism.
Well, he was panicking, hence why he wasn't breathing out.
Yeah.
And it's neat. Like, okay, so the rest of the crew is, I don't want to say interchangeable, but they're pretty unimpressive with the exception of,
Well, Sean Pertwee and Jason Isaacs look identical.
They do. And one is DJ, one is Smith. Doesn't really matter. One is like kind of a medic. One is kind of an engineer.
Who is the blonde woman that Lawrence
Stark.
Lawrence Fishburne has a thing for?
Richardson, and then you have Kathleen Quinlan, who's the med tech, Peters. I'm looking at IMDb. I'd forget most of this stuff. Don't.
Lawrence Fishburne has a thing for. I thought it was Cooper because Cooper was the one who's mouthing off about. Yeah.
And Cooper
coffee.
Is the one who's the. He's like a guy in a police academy.
Like, they implied that Stark.
You're the blonde girl.
The blonde girl and Lawrence Fishburne had at least once been together, especially during their goodbye scene.
I will say I get the feeling from him he's more of a paternal figure. He's afraid that he's going to lose a cast member, so he's very like he's I don't say demanding, but he's very protective of his crew. Because we see what is his name? Edward Corrick.
Oh yeah.
Who is the one
Mr. Crispy.
we even have the Jaws scene where he's like, I've seen men die.
Yeah.
But he's talking about how his one of his spaceships caught fire and he watched the crew burst into flames and in space without gravity. Fire looks like water. It rolls over things.
And just Sam Neill's eyes are like a doll's eyes.
That's why he removes them.
Yes.
He plucks the eyes out of his fucking skull. That is a hell of a scene.
They show the first part of that, and then just suddenly, he doesn't have eyes. It was weird.
Well, I will say, every set dresser ever wants to make a spaceship. These halls are amazing. The bombs everywhere are amazing. The Lewis and Clark is amazing. Sam Neill's trying to figure out why the drive is failing. It shouldn't be able to activate itself. He doesn't know why. And he honestly, at the beginning, believes it. It shouldn't start by itself. He's frustrated that anyone thinks it can start by itself, that he even thinks Justin started it in some way. He's pissed off.
Yeah.
So he crawls into this ductwork of circuitry that is the most vivid, brilliant thing
we've seen in the movie. Everything is shades of gray.
It looks like a room in Cube.
Yes.
All that bright green.
Yeah, yeah.
It's an equally kind of horrifying thing. It's or a scene out of Tron, maybe. I don't know how to describe it.
It was probably a reference to 2001 when Dave is shutting down HAL and he's looking through all the different circuits and stuff.
So you're saying that Paul W.S. Anderson didn't have a Kubrick-like budget or grasp of lighting? Because that's actual circuitry. Here he's looking at, like, it looks like overhead projectors of green.
So the production designer went into Circuit City and, like, give me everything.
And that kept Circuit City in business until it failed during the recession. Yeah.
They bought stock in the movie, and when it didn't do well, that was the end.
That's so great.
So I do, well, I don't entirely hate to be the person that says, I told you so.
Sure you do.
You love it.
I know. Originally, part of the thing about this movie is there was like 40 minutes of footage that was cut out of it, and according to our friends at the Tribune, part of that was a subplot between Stark and Miller.
There you go.
So, yeah.
Mm. A romantic subplot?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
With sexy results?
Well, I mean, most of the stuff that got cut out was, like, incredibly gory footage that caused the test audience to faint, apparently, so.
Well, I mean, it's the montage of hell itself where people are, you know, given stigmata and strapped in barbed wire and disemboweled, which we get glimpses of. We get a montage, you know, 1980s dress-up montage sequence.
Yeah, you don't even see it at first. You just see the looking at the log. All of a sudden, the two female characters just are screaming and then cut to everyone watching it.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I'm talking about at the very end.
Oh, the psychic thing.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the scene that Matt's talking about was really cut down because that's where people were apparently fainting.
I don't doubt it.
Some of the stuff I read about the movie calls it the blood orgy.
Yeah.
Well, that's what it is. No, I mean, it becomes Caligula for 6 minutes and then it fades back to Caligula light, I guess.
I'll say that it doesn't need any more than it already has.
This is a good job by Studio Notes.
Yeah.
I'll be perfectly honest. It comes off as a competently made horror movie. And you still get bits of it. I do like a movie that doesn't over-explain itself. It's what we were talking about last week with Blade Runner.
It doesn't even explain what an Event Horizon is.
No.
Yeah.
Which is the simplest thing of all to explain, considering that there's that one scene where everyone's staring at Sam Neill and he's folding over the porno mag and poking it through. He's like, science. And then people are like, what are you talking about? Because that's kind of
layman's funny. Terms.
Yeah, Cooper's pretty funny. Can you speak English?
But
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth? And that's why Chris Tucker still does not have a career.
Maybe you put him in a space movie.
We're doing one of his movies later this season.
Oh, really?
We're doing the Luc Besson of Fifth Element.
Oh, yes, Rudy Rod.
Is that his best role?
Yes.
Smokey, come on.
Oh, shit.
Smokey.
I love Jeremy. He puts me in my place every time I think I'm clever. Luc Besson movies. We're doing a lot of space movies this time around. That's a good season.
They were an integral part of our childhood.
And they're all from the same era. We were talking about how many movies we talked about came in 97.
Fifth Element came out the same year as Event Horizon.
We already did Air Force One.
We did Air Force One. And we did Harrison Ford last week. It's full circle, man. Mm. You could do a Kevin Bacon game for this show, and then you'd be the one person doing it. I was just thinking how great it would be to, like, because we just finished up mission briefing and stuff.
Well, speaking of what Daniel said, they think they found a videotape with the original cut somewhere.
A videotape?
Yeah, a videotape.
Oh, so this is never going to get seen?
Not film quality, at least. But I mean, one of the guys all the movie like, has it, and they took it to Spain with him or something.
On vacation?
Okay,
So, I mean, maybe someone somewhere will release, there'll be a video release of, not a video, but the, like, no, insano cut.
That's totally what they should do. They should make, like, 1,000 VHS copies of the director's cut and be like, all right, here you go.
I just imagine some tweaked out guy in, like, Barcelona with
you got the director's cut. I need that stuff.
And then, like, he opens up, like, this kind of Hawaiian shirt, and he has this sleeve that just says beta is better. And he's like, I got what you need, man. It's fucking full-on gore, man. And it's just Mel Gibson trying to make a sequel to Passion of the Christ.
Yeah.
I hated that movie. God, it was trash. Anyway.
Future episode? Question mark?
I can't, oh, boy. I'd have to watch it again. Watching people make up Aramaic, it's bullshit.
Yeah, that's
so, effectively, when the Clark crash, like, gets too close at the beginning, which we didn't really talk about.
Oh, yeah.
Justin accidentally activates this thing because they're just looking for components. They're trying to figure out stuff. Mm-hmm. But by accidentally activating the drive, it damages the ship. So we have a timeline. We have
via
20 hours.
A gravity wave, which isn't a thing.
It's okay. You know, it just... I'm sure in the 90s, when Neil deGrasse Tyson was in high school, he thought...
Pretty sure it's not a thing.
Well, a lot of the science I like in this, it uses Newtonian physics. Like, when the Lewis and Clark is docking, it starts firing rockets in its nose to slow down. Because in space, you have to do that.
Well, and if Kelly ever listens to this and judges me and hits me because she's violent... gravity waves are a thing theorized by Einstein, but they're not necessarily in favor anymore. I checked. Don't worry. Google wouldn't lie. but they would sell ads to the Russians. So, thank you, Jeremy. I love you, too. Now, so half this crew is trying to fix the ship so they can leave. And then the other half is trying to figure out what's going on because this is a mission. Like and Sam Neill has a hard on about trying to figure out what happened to his ship.
Well, except he's constantly dodging the question to the point where Lawrence Fishburne has to pretty much threaten him in order to try and get him to do anything.
Yeah, and he's a guy who supposedly built this ship, but he's like, I don't know where it's been. I mean, he could say at least, well, it was supposed to go to Proxima Centauri.
Well, and the other side of it is it reminds me kind of Farnsworth from Futurama, where it's like, well, it might run on orphan baby souls. Like, it's powered by tears. Like he just...
The Event Horizon might. You never know.
I mean, it would make sense. It's why it opens a portal to hell.
Good news, everyone. We've discovered the Event Horizon orbiting above Neptune.
That's the closest I can do that.
Fair enough.
The bad news, it's been to hell.
And so now we're dealing with two different things. Stark starts to think that the ship is kind of alive in some way because it's reacting. Yeah, they start hallucinating. And the other half is the logistics of preparing to leave versus not wanting to leave. Miller versus Weir is Sam Neill's character's name.
Right.
And Weir, I referenced this earlier, he's losing his mind, doesn't really, just jumps from I'm hallucinating my dead wife in the air duct to you can't leave, she won't let you.
He's possessed by whatever the Event Horizon has.
It suddenly becomes like very kind of medieval Catholic where it's like literally a demonic possession and the demon is all powerful and it changes his appearance eventually and then it's like literally fight to the death. It's
except he gets destroyed by a crossbow to a window. So there's that.
He is killed in a very medieval way somehow, which is kind of neat. So yeah, we've been talking a good length on this. Final thoughts before we kind of go to final judgments. I will say the imagery in this is incredible. Like people appearing without eyes first in flashes and then like kind of flashbacks, and then all of a sudden we see him kind of after Stark falls to her death, seeing her son. Whose birthday she misses.
Oh, yeah. Was that the kid that had the, cut up legs?
Yeah, you see him in the video. He's in a wheelchair, but you never really see why. And then she sees a hallucination of him with, acid burns on his legs or something.
And then he's running around playing, which she kind of follows. And then she falls to her death.
That's right.
Yeah, that's getting into, too dumb to live territory there.
Was that Stark or was that a Kathleen?
That was Peters.
Peters, you're right. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Peters is a brunette.
Jim Lovell's wife from Apollo 13. That's who that was.
Girl.
We found out how Matthew classifies women by their hair color.
Cooper, after fixing the ship, comes inside to see things have gone completely to hell.
Literally.
Justin is saved after going outside and is put in one of the kind of stasis tubes. Mm-hmm. And now we're down to almost nothing. Peters is dead. Stark is trying to survive, barely. Anyway, it's a horror movie. We don't need to give away exactly the end, but literally the portal to hell starts to reopen after Sam Neill tries to activate it, and we get the last 10 minutes.
He does activate it, and the whole thing is he's going to send everybody back to hell, and they're trying to find a way to either shut it down or get it so that they can get away.
It's really like, it really screams to me like an old Crusader story from like the Middle Ages. It's really fantastic. Someone is opening a portal to hell. You know, it would be a shitty podcast if it wasn't an amazing movie.
It's throne room is the wrong word, with all the giant spikes.
Yeah, I mean it's truly spectacular. Like this, and you know, Jeremy and I were talking, as much as Jeremy talks during a movie, we're all kind of entangled by this, but the set of this is just amazing.
I got a Tim Burton vibe of all things off the control room where the core is. It's like everything is black and brutal and spiky and rotates.
It looked more like something to me out of The Crow or Dark City or something. It looked like that subterranean cavern where all the strangers live in Dark City.
See, I was thinking it looked, I guess we're all going to share. It looked to me kind of, you know, I don't know, early James Cameron or something, and then evolved into Cronenberg.
Yeah, like the early James Cameron, The Abyss.
But yeah, that's pretty much it. I think we did it justice. We've been talking for almost 37 minutes. Some of it will be edited down. Not much. So let's give our final thoughts. We'll start with Daniel and work back around the horn.
I enjoyed it. It's not one of my favorites, but I at least liked that Paul Anderson was trying for once in his career to make something halfway decent. And it's still got some pretty shocking moments in it, which most horror films, to me, really don't. So if you like horror films, then yeah, you could do a lot worse than Event Horizon.
Jeremy?
I'll take it even further. This is my favorite horror movie. I think the production design is impeccable. I seriously think it's Oscar worthy, but you know, science fiction horror never gets a fair shake at the Oscars.
You mean in the technical awards? Oscar?
No, he thinks overall. Hmm? Best picture.
I wouldn't argue with that, but sure. Yeah, I think it's genuinely scary. It has gore, but it's used sparingly compared to today, where people, for some reason, think gore equals scary. No, it's just blood. Yeah. You do get the impression that the crew is almost kind of like a family, albeit dysfunctional at times. And yeah, I just think it's completely effective, very well made, and yeah, I mean, it's literally been 20 years since I first saw it, and it's still as good today as it was when I first saw it.
Thank you, Matt.
Okay, I didn't love it the way you guys did. I mean, it's well made. The science, at least, get some of it plausible, and the things about characterization is good. I did see it, but I saw it more recently than when it came out, probably on VHS in the later 90s or early aughts. I mean, it's well done and creative and all that. So, I mean, that's worth seeing.
Oh, I thought you were going to say see it once. That's what you always said. That's why I had the one finger.
Okay, fine. See it once because it's good, but it's not great.
I was blown away. I had never seen this before, honestly. I thought I had seen more of it than I had. The scene where Sam Neill plucks his eyes out is, I think, possibly some of his best acting, other than the scene where he's running away from the T-Rex in Jurassic Park.
Oh, I thought you were going to say when he pretends to get shocked by the fence.
Oh. He gives some serious Pierce Brosnan pain acting, like, but when he has the flare and Ian Malcolm's behind him, anyway. However, I will say this movie not only looks amazing, I would say it's horror, but like the atmosphere feels more suspense or thrillery. I agree with you. That's why like a Jason movie or a Michael movie or whatever, Michael Myers, you know, like the Love Guru. They're scary in their own way, but it's really more like grab a beer and some friends and watch a stupid kind of horror movie. These are the ones that get to me more. Because they build and they build and they build, and you realize how alone and dismal and horrifying it is. And then, not unlike The Thing from a few weeks ago, they realize they're literally the last hope from complete galactic destruction, whatever it is. Like, it's a weird kind of atmospheric horror that I really appreciated. So, that's it, guys. Thanks for listening. As tradition now, I'm going to give you a hint as to what the next movie is going to be. So everyone loves Kyle MacLachlan and everyone loves the new Twin Peaks that came out, at least a little bit. They like the idea that Twin Peaks came back. This is the first time David Lynch directed Kyle MacLachlan. That's our next movie.
Got a light.
Got a light. With that in mind, tune in next week and every future week as we put another little piece of your past on trial. Thanks, guys.
Myopi Defend Your Childhood is a member of the ESO Network and produced by Dude Letter Podcasting. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman. It is edited by Nick Hoffman and Candace Burns. The theme song is Caroline by The Serenaders, and their music is available on Amazon. Please rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcast. And tune in next week when we put another little piece of your past on trial. Thanks!